informed, and I don't think it comes as a surprise, that making sense of the figures, even after an hour and a half, is not really possible. So what I would suggest, rather than us wasting more time on this issue, is that when we put the questions that they've got to respond to in writing, we can then also get in writing back agreeable, in writing back the breakdown of the figures. We're not going to change the deadline though, so there's a weekend in between. So we're not going to change the deadline or anything like that, but that we can then have those complete figures by that Wednesday, as I said. So rather than wasting more time on something that is not going to be accurate, let's rather continue with the board. Commissioner Jacobs, over to you. You're going to take us through. We members will remember from last time that we've gone through the bill once already, and there were a couple of changes that we set subs and the secretariat must go and put in the document, and the state law advisors and the drafting team. So can we ask you to take us through the bill again? And I would suggest that we do it like we did previously, section by section, and we comment on those sections, ask questions if we have to, if we can just skip it and go to the next one. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Jay, you mentioned, I see that we have exhibited a long title, but once again, I'm just going to skip that. The first amendment is the amendment of section
363. Tonight I'll send the presentation to
section 363 of the Criminal Procedure Act is hereby amended, and then we go to A on that page. By the insertion before the definition.
Can I just stop you one second? I just want to make sure that we use the same draw. Because the draft that I have in front of me does not have color coding. It's black and white, which is going to make it extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Is it different?
Jefferson, we mailed the with the color.
I'm not blaming you. Committee section is in trouble already. Yeah, but it's going to make it very difficult for members. Committee section says they don't have color copiers.
Yeah, just read it to you. Can you understand me? Because they're saying this thing. It's black and white.
No, let's just continue. If even if it means we go a bit slower, let's still continue. It is then this copy that was sent to you. It's got final on it.
Yeah.
And that's a wish by the department.
Everything they've written so far is fine.
Okay, let's start then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. On the first page, the final is the final part. Chair, then if we can go to page 3, and the first part, section 36A, on top the appropriate person, etc., that is part of the existing legislation. There's no change to that. So the first amendment is paragraph 3 at the bottom of page 3. By the insertion before the definition of authorized person of the following definition. A authorized officer means the police officer commanding the division responsible for forensic services within the service or his or her delegate. The substitution for the definition of authorized person of the following definition. Authorized person means, and here Roman figure 1, that paragraph links actually with the fingerprint part, but we have also made a change there to deal with the independent police investigative director. In other words, it reads with reference to photographic images, fingerprints or body prints. Any police official for a member of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, referred to in the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act 2011, Act number 1 of 2011, comma, in the performance of his or her official duties. And Roman 2, with reference to buccal samples, any police official or member of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate referred to in the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act, Act number 1 of 2011, which not the, and it was inserted after the committee discussion, not the crime scene examiner of the particular case was also inserted, but has successfully undergone the training prescribed by the Minister of Health under the National Health Act 2003, Act number 61 of 2003, in respect of the taking of the buccal sample. And three, any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse defined in the National Health Act 2003, Act number 61 of 2003, providing services to the Department of Correctional Services. Chair, we have a proposal we want to make, which links up with one of the options that was mentioned by Correctional Services, that we retain them as a possibility, but then also add that a police official might take at the Correctional Services facility as well.
Rivers, can I hear members on this? Because I'm concerned. And I must be honest with you, in terms of that, if we leave it here, that in the end, SAPS stand back and say it's Correctional Services that must do this. A registered medical practitioner can do so in any case, can't they? Do we need to be specific in the Act around this?
Jay, as I understand that notice that we look at a registered medical doctor or nurse, actually may need the additional training.
So there's no need to have it here. Is it correct? That's what I'm asking.
Chair, I think further on when we talk about the taking of health considerations, we should actually be specific, but we should allow for it here in case there is a situation where in some instance the nurse, the medical practitioner is not.
Thank you, Chair. I thought perhaps it could be okay not to qualify Correctional Services only in this medical practitioner.
Nadia is just showing to me that the SAPS Act actually speaks to medical practitioners, so it's not necessary to have it here. Yeah, so it's got to be in line. It's not in line as it is currently, because here you're referring to all, and the other one is just referring to Correctional Services. So, I mean, we need to get it in line. Use the one definition. The one reads under 15E Roman 2. Any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse defined in the National Health Act 2003 is an authorized person. And the CPA Act now doesn't make them an authorized person. So I think this one is correct. We need to then bring that over and take out the reference to CSA. CSC. Members, are we happy with that part? Can I continue?
Okay.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. C then is the insertion after the definition of body prints of the following definition. CA, body sample, means intimate and buccal samples taken from a person. CB, buccal sample, means a sample of cellular material taken from the inside of a person's mouth. The Chair, D and E are existing in the Act. The next insertion is D. By the substitution for the definition of comparative search of the following definition. F, comparative search means the comparing and then delete all fingerprints, body prints, or photographic images taken under any power conferred by this chapter by an authorized officer. You will recall that there was an authorized person, it's been changed to authorized officer. Of Roman 1, fingerprints, body prints, or photographic images taken under any power conferred by this chapter against any database referred to in Chapter 5A of the South African Police Service Act, and 2 forensic DNA profiles derived from body samples taken under any power conferred by this chapter against forensic DNA profiles contained in the different indices of the NFPD referred to in Chapter 5B of the South African Police Service Act. In paragraph E, by the insertion after the definition of comparative search of the following paragraphs, FA, crime scene sample, means physical evidence which is retrieved from the crime scene or any other place where evidence of the crime may be found and may include physical evidence collected from the body of the person, including a sample taken from a nail or from under the nail of the person. Chair, you recall that was that part was shifted from the previous definition of non-incident sample. So that was included in here from the definition because we deleted the definition of non-incident sample. Thank you, Chair. FB, DNA means directly ionotric acid, which is a biochemical molecule found in the cells and that makes each species unique. FC, forensic DNA analysis, means the analysis of sections of the dioxide of a body sample to determine the forensic DNA profile, provided that this does not relate to any analysis pertaining to medical tests or for health purposes or mental characteristic of the person, or to determine any physical information of the person other than the gender. FD, forensic DNA profile means the results obtained from forensic DNA analysis of body samples taken from a person or from a crime scene, providing a unique string of alphanumeric characters to provide identity reference, provided this does not contain any information on the health or medical condition or mental characteristic of the person or the predisposition or physical information of the person other than the gender. And if we
can we stop the okay, can we stop here for a second? Can we just go back to HC? Forensic DNA analysis means analysis of sections of the DNA acid of a bodily sample or crime scene sample. Shouldn't it be included? You'd be doing analysis of both. That's why I'm saying it's not there. So it should say acid of a bodily sample, all crime scene sample. But it's also because of the collection of DNA at the crime scene and the analysis thereof. Am I correct? If I'm not correct, please indicate.
It's supposed to be.
Not the same thing. A bodily sample is not necessarily a crime scene sample.
Mm.
So it's got to be and or crime scene sample. You've got to make provision for analyzing both of these. Correct? Okay. So can we make sure that we put that in there?
Chair, I propose that we use the word or because that will mean and or.
Okay.
Okay. Just a question, Chair. I just wanted to know if the business of, and I know we agreed with this long ago, to say that a buccal swab is not an intimate sample. Has that ever been challenged elsewhere in the world? I mean, it is putting something in somebody's mouth. I understand it's not drawing blood, but how is the buccal swab defined in legislation elsewhere? Is it as an intimate sample or a non-intimate sample? I'm just scared we might have some kind of challenge because of that definition. And that's in the back of my head, it's been bugging me for a long time. Is this the norm, or are we breaking ground here?
Thank you, Chair. It is actually a norm.
Okay. which is used in the UK, in Canada, where the human rights activists are also quite sensitive. But during the consultations, they said it was an easy sample to take. Although they mentioned that in joking manner, kissing seems intimate, but the sample is not.
Okay.
So, but it is mammography.
As long as it's
mammography.
Thank you.
Just before you continue, if she again, and I don't understand if we've had this discussion between gender and sex, it's still year gender, it should be sex. Yeah, throughout the document. No, yeah, but sorry, year, it must be sex. And AD must be sex, not gender. I don't need to explain again why.
Okay. I think I see the gender.
Don't ask it again.
Oh, I am being pushed on to ask a question again.
Okay, and then on FD as well, if we can look at the second line, analysis of body samples taken from a person, all samples taken from a crime scene. It's not all from a crime scene, it's not necessarily bodily samples.
What is that?
FD.
Yeah.
Analysis of body samples taken from a person, all samples taken from a crime scene. Correct? Okay, so if we can make sure about that change as well. You can continue, please. And here it's also six, right? D.
Jay, if I can just mention a question from Nicole Barnett. There was also this recent case in the United States that we referred to in our first issue, where it was the fingerprints and DNA samples were actually likened to each other, and that these officers are not to intimate sample means a sample of blood or pubic hair or a sample taken from the genitals or anal orifice area of the body of the person, excluding A, buccal sample, then you've inserted here the word or, B, every sample taken or test performed, as may be necessary to determine whether a person suspected of having, one, handled or discharged a firearm, has indeed handled or discharged a firearm, and two, handled or detonated an explosive, has indeed handled or detonated an explosive. Chair, this was an insertion. You will recall that we have, if we get to the amendment to the Explosives Act and the Farms Control Act, we have proposed for those to be deleted, as it made sense when we only dealt with the fingerprints to have this as an overarching or interim measure. But now that the DNA is actually addressed comprehensively in this Act, the provisions in the Criminal Procedure Act will actually be wider than the present provisions in the Firearms and the Explosives Act. So, Chair, we have also here just excluded the issue of the tests that are being performed to test whether a person has handled a firearm or explosives.
Can I just say, I think it's at the wrong place. It needs to move to crime scene samples. It needs to be under FA, this one. I don't know if you disagree with me, but I mean, it's a crime scene sample. It's not an intimate sample or non-intimate sample. It's a crime scene sample. And it needs to move to FA. Correct? Okay. Members, anything on this? Can we continue?
Yeah, we can.
Very good. Any questions, James? We know that. We know that. But it's still a crime scene sample. It's not an intimate or non-intimate sample. It's a crime scene sample.
It links to the definition of intimate sample, intimate sample there, which needs to follow chronologically.
Okay.
sample means a sample of blood or pubic hair or a sample taken from the genitals, excluding a buccal sample, all this. Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying. But then why don't we have the nail ear and other crime machine samples? If you want to, I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's the exclusion, I understand that. But then look again at FA, then why don't we have the nail, under the nail, including the sample taken from a nail or from under the nail of the person? Why, if you want to exclude, then you've got to exclude completely. Unless you just simply say, there's an excluding. We're differentiating between intimate and non-intimate samples, and we differentiate between crime scene samples, correct? And bodily samples. So there's something missing here, unless you want to reword it to say something else. I mean, but there's something missing here.
So I can just maybe explain what the concern was, that it's sometimes really difficult to explain the difference between taking a sample and doing this test. This test for the explosives and firearms is just something that's been sprayed on the body, but there's also like a sample taken of it. But I think the main concern that we have is that there's a time limit to this. And if you do not take it very soon, it disappears. We have so much, etc. So I think we just need to I agree with you. It seemed to relate more to a currency. But it's not, in the strict sense, a sample. It's really a test, but there is a sample taken of it as well. So, Jay, I think we need to make sure where we put it in. Whether under the, maybe not this, maybe it's not really under the exclusion of the bodies of the internet.
Because intimate sample means what it means. Why do you want in a definition to put in what is defined somewhere else?
So the other possibility would be just delete that part in the final sample. I suppose it's just retain the options here. Just retain that one sentence in the section 1.3 of the final structural edit.
That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that you do need that definition. That's fine, but then it should be moved to be form part of your crime scene samples that you are taking, and then this FE can actually stop body of a person, full stop, because it's a definition. Intimate sample means a sample of blood, pubic hair, the area of the body of a person. But it's not the buccal sample is not the intimate sample. You don't have a definition of non-intimate. Is that why you put it here?
We had initially a definition of a buccal sample, which also included, of a non-intimate sample. At the stage, it included the buccal sample as sample underneath the name. But we then said, and the samples underneath the nails are normally crime scene samples, so they are not placed in the proper area for a non-intimate sample. and then we move it. So the general explained that then if you are in a designation sense, you can't have backup sample as the only designation to a non-intimate sample, so rather than the surgery backup sample. But with the discussions at hand now, we are saying to general, can we not reconsider putting back the definition of a non-intimate sample and then make provision for the backup sample and the provision. But then we also explained to say these are now tests and which may be taken for a different purpose, but they're still non-intimate, which could still fit the analogy of the study.
You're not getting the person's DNA either. That's the problem. That's why it's confusing. To think, should it be here at all? Keep buccal sample there, but take out that. Take that out. Keep buccal sample, but take the test part out. Are we in agreement? You're not getting DNA from the person when you spray his hands or her hand to see whether they've handled a firearm and fired a shot. It's a test. You're not gathering DNA.
Yeah.
So can we remove that?
Okay.
Remove B completely. Continue, please. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. PSG, what would any amendment, any DD means the National Forensic DNA Database of South Africa, established in terms of Section 15G of the South African Police Service Act? Here on page 7F, by the substitution in subsection 2 for the words DCB5A of the following words, any police official who, in terms of this act or any other law, takes the fingerprints, a body print or body sample, or certain any bodily feature of a child must, and then the rest is the present wording of the section.
You
on
this,
I think?
Continue.
Thank you, Chair. G, by the addition of the following subsections, three buccal samples must be taken by an authorized person who is of the same sex as the person from whom such sample is required with strict regard to decency and order. Chair, this was especially attended to in respect of the taking of a sample also where a doctor is involved. For an authorized person may take a body sample with the consent of the person whose body sample is taken, or only if authorized under A, Section 36D, or B, Section 36E. And 5, any authorized person who, in terms of this chapter or in terms of any other law, takes a buccal sample from any person, must do so in a designated area, deemed suitable for such purposes as determined by the Departmental Heads of Police, Justice and Constitutional Development or Correctional Services in their area of responsibility, and subject to 1, subsection 2, and 2, the requirements of any regulation made by the Minister of Police or instruction made by the Commissioner of Correctional Services, and be subject to any legal requirements pertaining to the disposal of biomedical waste. Chair, and I think although we have changed a bit regarding the correctional services, I think the designation of the area will still be applicable.
Members, can I hear you on this one?
Honourable
Governor?
Yeah, I just had a slight concern that in the list just prior to this, when we're talking about the bodily samples of a child, the A, B, C, and D, is that taken specifically from an act that relates to children, perhaps? Did we cut and paste that? Because it differs quite markedly. For example, do so in a private area, not in view of the public, yet the next one is in a designated area. You know, there are different definitions. I wasn't sure if that was something taken from an act that pertains specifically to children. And also, it is not mentioned in the one above on the children that it has to be of a person of the same sex, and yet it's mentioned in G that it must be from a person of authorized person who is of the same sex. That's not referred to under the child issue. So, I mean, that should be, I believe, a standard procedure throughout. So I wasn't sure why it was different for the child.
So, if I can explain, ABCD is the present wording of the procedure. So we have only changed the introduction thereof to include that whenever a body sample is taken, to also make it applicable the same as when fingerprints are being taken. So this comes from the terminal of the existing Criminal Procedure Act.
But could you also respond to the question? I think that I hear what you're saying, I'm satisfied with that. I think there's stricter rules around the child, and therefore private area comes in. But I think the member's point around the gender issue, do you feel that it's covered by 3G3, or should it be stated explicitly there as well, where we talk about same gender?
Maybe we should rather mention it explicitly.
I think so.
Can we add an E to this, please?
After ABCD,
on page seven.
Or you add E.
Add E.
Just the same gender. Same as interested. Otherwise, it's.
Can I just ask the researcher to address us on this gender sex issue here? Because the fact of the matter, I think it's more complicated than we're making it. And it becomes complicated here, specifically here. It becomes complicated. And now we've got to be clear about what we want because we're putting a certain obligation on such in terms of this. It's also about when we arrest people in which cells do we put them. It's the same type of issue that comes into play. Can I hear you, Nadia?
Gender is how you identify yourself growing up and as a person. So you might be born, and there are cases where people are born as a sex is male, but they don't identify themselves as a male. They might even go so far as to have a sex change or whatever. It's still not going to change their DNA. They're still going to be a male in their DNA, but they identify themselves as female. And that's your gender. And that's just your job. So when you have a police officer who is searching someone or doing a test, my understanding is it should be the same gender, not necessarily sex of the person. Because in that case, that person, really, you don't know what that person was born or whatever. You've got a person standing in front of you who identifies themselves as a woman. And that woman is going to search me or do a test for me, and I'm going to be perfectly comfortable with it. I'm going to be less comfortable if there's a person who's going to be searching me who might be born a woman, but actually identifies herself as a male, and her gender identity is a male, certainly I wouldn't be that comfortable with that, because I would see that person as a male, and that's how she would want to be. So for me, that's the difference between sex and gender.
That's why I say it's a difficult issue, especially when we get down to this point of it. It's fine where we've changed it before, it's correct. It's not a problem. But here it becomes an issue. And we know it's an issue because we know that there are people that have complained that they consider themselves to be female, they get locked up in a male cell. Now, I'm raising this issue because we as legislators need to apply our minds as well, because we're putting an obligation on such that is very, very difficult and almost impossible for some to make that decision. What do we want here?
To identify a person.
Oh.
That was gender. We have to go with gender.
No, I mean gender.
We have to go with gender.
So it's what's comfortable for the person in front of you. It's not your choice. You might see that person as a male, but that person sees themselves as a female, and therefore you've got to respect the fact that they're going to be, the vital sample is going to be taken by a female. Are we happy with that?
Yeah.
And it seems like we have to define gender and sex.
Well,
okay, can we continue, please?
I asked you a question,
No, you were right then as well. So can we then, it means G also got to change to gender, eh?
G.
So we add E, gender, and then G, 3. Bible samples must be taken by an authorized person who is of the same gender as the person from whom such a sample is taken. It's now the choice of the individual in front of you. Please continue, please. Page 8. Quite correctly, what you've put here, and I agree with you, even though we take away the role of correctional services, they still have an obligation in terms of the places that's going to be taken. But what about justice regulations? Because we're also giving, we say in A, on top of page 8, we say police, justice and constitutional development, all correctional services in the area of responsibility. Then 2, we say the requirements of any regulations made by the Minister of Police or instruction made by the Commissioner of Correctional Services and justice. You've got to put justice in here as well, the Minister of Justice.
Yeah.
Because we've got them in A. Or you've got to remove them from A.
I think the only concern is, Chair, that I don't think in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, the Minister of Justice is in the powers of regulation. So maybe we will have to word it in a different way to address that. Because we talk in 8 about a determination. I think SOC2 relates more to regulations which is more substantive than just the determination of the of place.
Well, it might be that the Chief Justice has got to determine that. I don't know, because I know you're talking about the independence around the courts and the places, because what we're making provision for here is if a sample's got to be taken at court. Am I correct? So then it most probably will be the Chief Justice. But can you look at it and come back to us on that issue, please, that we just have clarity on how to correctly word it. Sorry, members, while I'm at that, I think just 2 issues that I'm interrupting myself. Chief Justice Pines Longo has passed on.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, from the committee side, we also want to convey our condolences to his family and the Justice family as well in terms of that. And then in terms of something that affects us, and just for the interest sake of members and also the department, Dewani has been extradited and is coming to South Africa now. Okay, so we can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I think we can then move to page 13, the insertion of sections 36D and 36D in Act 51 of 1977.
It's page 10.
Page 13.
Page
13.
No, Chairperson. Before you come to page 13. Did we have 330 days on page 10?
Like you might say, there's some provisions in the Act, the fingerprints part, and it's not applicable in terms of this. I think we just put it in terms of the context.
Yeah. You missed the sections that we're skipping is the Fingerprints Act. So that's what we've written in 2 years back in the Fingerprints Act. So that refers to that. But the fact that the member is raising that question, we need to remind ourselves, given the presentation of this morning, that where we've put in, I'm just putting that, and I think that's why the members raised it here as well, is that the deadlines that we've given might not be achievable. But the 30 days here is fine. But when we get to those, we need to revisit them, given the presentation of this morning. We don't want to have a situation where we put the laboratory in a position where they've got to come and defend themselves, and meanwhile we've known about the fact that it's not doable. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. That is the insertion of Section 36D and E in the Act. The following sections are hereby inserted in the Criminal Procedure Act 1977 after Section 36C. Powers in respect of buccal samples, body samples, and residue tests. Chair, if I could just interrupt myself here. We have looked at the National Health Act. There's actually a prohibition in the Health Act for the taking of, if I could say, body samples, just to generalize. And we thought of just putting in this section a sort of an exclusion or to refer to the fact that despite that prohibition in the National Health Act, that samples may be taken for law enforcement purposes, etc. But I've discussed it this morning with the health people as well, and I think it would actually be necessary. Could we, on this specific part, come back to the committee in the final draft with reading on that? It won't be very complicated, but just to ensure that there's no prohibition in another act which clashes with this one.
If I
hear
you correctly, Commissioner Jacobs, it might mean that there's going to be a change in the Health Act that makes provision for law for the purpose of applying the law. Or is that what you're saying?
Rather that we, in this Act, make a specific provision that, that despite the provisions of the health, National Health Act, that samples may also be taken in respect of this. So it will actually, in a way, it will breach the conflict.
I think it's better that you actually do come back to us on this issue, because I think we need to get clarity whether this will be enough and that it's not in conflict with the Health Act, or whether it actually would require the Health Act, an amendment to the Health Act also. I don't know. I'm putting it to you guys that you come back to us on that, so rather than putting it, that as spare time on the thing.
Just to put the committee in the picture there, if you look at Section 55 of the National Health Act, it reads removal of tissue, blood products, or remains from living persons. A person may not remove tissue, blood, a blood product, or remains from the body of another living person for the purposes referred to in Sections 56. And Section 56 relates to medical purposes. So it sounds like a sort of total prohibition, and we just need to address that. Thank you, Chair. Then Section 36D, 1, subject to Section 36A5, an authorized person must A, take a buccal sample, or B, cause the taking of any other body sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse defined in the National Health Act 2003, Act No. 61 of 2003, of any person, 1, arrested for any offence referred to in Schedule 1, 2, released on bail in respect of any offence referred to in Schedule 1, if a buccal sample or body sample of that person was not taken upon his or her arrest. 3, upon whom a summons has been served in respect of any offence referred to in Schedule 1. 4, whose name appears on the National Register for Sex Offenders. And 5, convicted by a court in respect of any offence which the Minister has by notice in the Gazette declared to be an offence for the purposes of this section, subsection. 2, the authorised person must supervise the taking of a buccal sample from the person referred to in subsection 1, who is required to submit such sample and who requests to take it himself or herself. Chair, I can just point out that this sub 2 has been inserted here as well as after the discussion by the committee to allow the person to voluntarily take the subject to Section 36A5, an authorised person may A, take a buccal sample, or B, cause the taking of any other body sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse of any person, 1, arrested in respect of any offence, 2, released on bail in respect of any offence, if a buccal sample or body sample was not taken upon his or her arrest, 3, upon whom a summons has been served in respect of any offence, 4, convicted by a court in respect of any offence which the Minister has by notice in the Gazette the care could be an offence for the purposes of this subsection. 4. The authorised person must supervise the taking of the buccal sample from a person referred to in subsection 3, who is required to take to submit such sample and request to take it himself or herself. That was also an insertion as a result of the committee discussion.
Members, any comments on this? Just one from my side. 2. The authorised person, if you now go back to the definitions, we've now put the medical people under there as well, which then means, in this sense here, it should be the police officer or IPED, rather than the authorised person, because it now speaks to cause the taking of any other bodily sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse. So we must be now more specific about the police officer or IPED official. Yep, I'm listening to you.
There are instances set up when a person goes to another person's office and to the medical practitioner for their interview or something. In which case, the authorized officer, who is now the medical practitioner, can also probably take it and some of the first provisions of the infection. So we have put it there for those scenarios so that can be the first or any possibly addresses that have to be the police officer.
So
Yes.
I'm not sure about that, because the authorized person, as we've just come through the definitions, now include the medical people, right? But now in the read C, the medical person caused the taking of any other bodily sample by a registered medical practitioner or a registered nurse.
Gee, it was also to provide the fact that the bodily sample, other than the buccal sample, may not be taken by
No, I understand that, but I think if my concern is around the use of the word authorized person at top, so you just need to correct that. The designated officer or IPED official or something like that. I don't know. But we can just look at that and then when we come back, we can have a look at it. Can you just repeat it for the sake of members again, please?
I'm saying subsection 2 as it is now and subsection 4 as it is now is exactly the same. So I'm saying instead of having it both at the adults, take subsection 2 out and move it to below subsection 3 and then just make a reference to the sections to which it should refer. So I only have one subsection in that issue.
Happy? Okay. You've got that, don't worry, it's going to come back to us again. It's just that there's a repetition of exactly the same thing, and it's just to make it easier to read as well.
Which one are we deleting? Which
two.
One are we taking out?
Two.
We're taking out two.
Mm-hmm.
And four.
Keeping four.
Okay.
But they will give us the correct version when we meet again.
Okay. No, I definitely
so I can mention that we actually considered it, but the way in which it is structured in terms of must and may, it sort of looks more user-friendly in terms of rather duplicating it than having one section at the bottom. Whilst there's anyway a lot of duplication between the two parts, one dealing with must and the other one with may. But we can see, I think it's possible to.
Can I also just have a look at it and come back to us in tomorrow's meeting on it? Just come back to us. Let's not spend time on what is actually a technical issue, but you can come back to us with a firm suggestion on it. Continue, please.
Chair, on page 15, number 5, an authorized person must, within 30 days, furnish every bodily sample taken under section 1 or 3 to the authorized officer who must carry out forensic DNA analysis of every such sample in terms of Chapter 5B of the South African Police Service Act. 6. Subject to Section 36A5, nothing in this chapter prohibits A, an authorized person from retaking a buffer sample from any person referred to in subsection 1 or 3. If the buccal sample taken from him or her was either not suitable for DNA analysis or insufficient, or B, a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse from retaking a bodily sample taken from any person referred to in subsection 1 or 3, if the bodily sample taken from him or her was either not suitable for DNA analysis or insufficient. 7, the forensic DNA profile derived from bodily samples taken under any power conferred by this section may be used to conduct a comparative search. 8, subject to paragraph B, any forensic DNA profile derived from such sample taken under any power conferred by this section must only be used, 1, for purposes related to the detection of crime, 2, for purposes related to the investigation of an offence, 3, for purposes related to the conducting of a prosecution, and we have inserted 4 defence, 4, in the identification of unidentified human remains, 5, in the identification of missing persons, or in period 6, to exonerate a person convicted of an offence. B, the forensic DNA profile derived from body samples taken under any power conferred by this section must be retained on or expunged from the NFDB in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 5B of the South African Police Service Act. C. Any person who allows, uses or allows the use of a bodily sample or any forensic DNA profile derived from such sample for any purpose other than as contemplated in paragraph 8, is guilty of an offence and liable in the case of a natural person to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 15 years, and in the case of a juristic person to a fine. Chair, we have aligned that with the in terms of the natural person and the juristic person. G, internet samples may only be taken, 1, by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse, and 2, in accordance with strict regard to decency and order. That was also a recommendation from the committee relating to also doctors and nurses. E, a person in respect of whom a sample is taken or test is performed, as referred to in paragraph D, need not be arrested solely for the purpose of taking the said sample or performing the said test. If any police official trained to take a sample or perform a test referred to in subparagraphs 1 and 2, including the crime scene examiner in a particular case, may at any time take any sample or perform any test as may be necessary to determine whether a person suspected of having handled or discharged a firearm has indeed handled or discharged a firearm, and 2, handled or detonated an explosive has indeed handled or detonated an explosive. Chair, you have already instructed us to look at that issue, but I think the fact that the power is given here may be that's an indication that we can actually meet it with the commission board.
Can we just stop?
Yes.
Can I? Thank you. Can I hear from members? Is there anything on this section, the 2 pages that you've gone through, that you want to raise that you still have concerns about? Can I just ask a practical question? 5. An authorized person must be in 30 days furnished. Now that, in plain simple terms, means the DNA samples at a police station needs to get to the laboratory within 30 days. My concern is authorized person, as it's defined, is referring to ordinary police officers. Now, we know how we struggle to get firearms. Is this the right person to give the responsibility to in terms of making sure that they get there? Does it not read? The authorized person is getting the sample. Is he the same person? Are we now going to say there are 5 authorized persons at a police station? And all 5 of them must make sure that these samples get to the laboratory within 30 days. or do we want to give that responsibility to where I think it belongs, the station commander? Now you've got a constable, who's the authorised person, doesn't have access to a vehicle. He's in kind of money where there's one police vehicle. Now we keep him responsible for this. I'm sorry, it's a practical question, but it's more than out of our experience on the ground. That's why I'm asking this question. Secretary.
I mean, I can agree with what you say, but can we look at the wording? Because it's not only station commissioners, it's also the head of the SCS unit in that area, whatever. So if we could just come back to you with the proper wording of that and just look into how we hold the management, in fact, at the different levels responsible for making sure it comes in as a first start for the safety conference.
Yeah, even if we agree fully with you, I mean, I'm not suggesting that it be station commission only. It can even be the branch commanders or the commanders or whatever the case may be. But I just think we must be careful again of creating a situation where this poor guy, who's actually a constable, have no control over whether it gets to the laboratory. And maybe lift this to the next level. Let's start addressing the problems we are experiencing also in legislation.
Should be a person in charge of the constable.
Yeah.
Just to point out that we removed under intimate sample on page 6 the whole issue. Okay, I don't know what that is. The issue about samples, about handling and discharging a firearm, etc., that was removed. But here, you know, we're referring on page 16 to this again, and it seems to fall under intimate samples. But have we shifted that perhaps under non-intimate samples elsewhere? The taking of samples in relation to handling, I mean, they're obviously not intimate samples, but I mean, do we detail them under non-intimate? Where are they now? They got removed from page 6, but I don't know if it was shifted under non-intimate somewhere under the definition, or if we need to define it at all. I'm just pointing that out, that we did remove this under 6 under intimate, but it seems to be under on page 16.
Mr. Jacobs has explained that now. The fact that we've taken it away there is now actually not an issue because it is dealt with here. Because we don't need to define it. Page 6 is looking at definitions. This is a test and it doesn't refer to DNA. But we need to have it here in terms of the reference and the sending of it to the laboratories, etc. So, okay, so we can... The question here is E. A person in respect of whom a sample is taken or test performed as referred to paragraph D need not be arrested.
Yes.
Should this section not fall under 36? Where we talk about 36E. Samples for investigation purposes.
This is a cut and test.
Can you look at that for us, please?
Yeah, I suspect that the reference should be to paragraph F, because that is the, even if you look at the Firearms Act and the Explosives Act, you need not arrest the person to perform that. So I think we will just look at the reference.
No, but
E
as well,
you
don't have to arrest. That's the point we're making. So can we just look at that for us? Check for us if you... Then we can just clarify first when we get back to that, please. Can we continue, please?
Continue on page 16, 9. Subject to subsection 8A and B, the head of the correctional center or the non-detention facility in which the person is incarcerated or his or her delegated must ensure that a vital sample is taken of any person who is serving a sentence of imprisonment at a correctional center or a non-detention facility I think for the instance of this chapter, for any offence before the release of such person from the correctional centre or remand detention facility, if it had not already been taken upon his or her release. Chair, and then we propose to insert a new subsection 10, subsequent to the discussion with correctional services. For the purposes of subsection 9, a buccal sample may be taken by an authorised officer who is a police official.
Minister, can we talk about this? This is following the discussion of this morning. My first concern is whether the head of correctional services or a remand detention facility must be the responsible person to ensure that this happens, or whether it is such that must ensure that it happens.
Chair, my feeling is that the section that deals in terms of responsibility, SAPS must be given the task of doing it, that we must allow correction, so it must be the other way around. What General Jacob would say in terms of the last insert, it should provide for correctional services being able to take it, but the responsibility should lie with SAPS.
That's
not what I'm asking. Look at 9. Subject to subsection 8A and D, the head of correctional centre or remand detention facility in which the person is incarcerated or his or her delegate must ensure, you're putting the obligation on correctional services, such must ensure, with the cooperation of the head of a correctional services facility or it's not, the obligation is such, it's not the head of the correctional services. If we want to know after this thing has been implemented why you haven't taken samples at correctional services facilities, we want to ask SAPS that. We're not going to ask correctional services that. Honourable Law?
Maybe they should explain, Jefferson. Are they talking about the person who is already in correctional service or not yet in correctional service?
It's already there.
If it's already there, then it's correctional service.
No, but following what correctional services said this morning, we cannot help keep them responsible, because they said to us this morning, if they're going to take their nurses and ensure that this happens, it's not going to happen.
I remember that the official from correctional services talked about a form that they could see from the form where it has been.
It's a different issue completely. We're talking about the 150,000 who are already in jail. That's what we're talking about. Now, the question, Honourable Glover, that we've got to ask, if the DNA of that 150,000 are not taken, who do we blame? Do we blame correctional services or do we blame SAPS? Because SAPS is the ones that are going to go in there to take it. I think personally you need to reword this, that such must ensure with the assistance of the head of the correctional services facility.
Then I will go along with the assistance of.
Yeah, with the assistance of.
Yeah, because you mustn't let the correctional service run away with it.
No.
Because they should be co-partners in this matter.
Yeah.
Because this person is already in the correctional service.
Yeah.
Therefore, subs and with the assistance of.
Can we agree with that for us for the next meeting? Are we in agreement, members? Honourable,
they said, yeah, they have national resources, but they don't have the capacity. They say, if you say with the answer, what does that mean?
We're saying such has the responsibility. So such is going to take the change the change that Commissioner Jacobs suggested is still going to come in, which is such officials can go in and take that sample. But what we want to say here is that it's such's ultimate responsibility to make sure that this happens with the assistance. With other words, they've got to phone correctional services, Paul's work, and say we want to come in next week to take DNA at your facility. Can you arrange it for us? They can't just storm the correctional services facility. that's basically all we're trying to do. It's still such that's going to go in. As it started currently, it's correctional services problem, and we want to change that, so they need to look at that part of it. I don't think it's a big change either.
No,
it's just
no.
A small wording change.
Yeah.
Can we continue?
Thank you, Chair. Then it becomes 11. Chair, I accept that possibly we will need to reformulate this as well to fit into the rest. At the moment, if it is the head of the correctional center or a non-detention facility, referred to subsection 9, where user delegate must ensure that the authorized officer is informed within 7 days that the bottle sample was taken and is ready for collection. That is, of course, only be applicable where they have taken the sample.
You see, the problem is, and that's sometimes frustrating to this committee, when you came here, you said to us, correctional services, they've got fridges told that they can do so, etc. Luckily, we've got members on the committee who also serve on correctional services. I heard clearly how they said this morning, it will even solve the problem of keeping the samples.
Yeah.
I heard them very, very clearly say that. They don't have the capacity to hold it. So you have to look at that part of it as well. It now again becomes SAPS's responsibility to make sure. And I mean, you, again, it's an interim arrangement almost. Once the 150,000 have been captured, and hopefully SAPS will use their minds and start with those who are up for who's going to be released in the next year, not start with the guys who've just started their 10-year sentence. They must almost finish taking the samples today, take it to the laboratory. Why would you want to keep it somewhere? But I think this whole section, can we just, I mean, it's been a bit of a rush job now, so we accept that there will be things that not, that is not going to be captured. So the obligation is not correctional services again, it's substance. Where do we put in correctional supervision?
Chair, we did discuss it, and the central advisors felt that the qualification there in paragraph 9 for any offence before the release of such person. In other words, if the person is taken to correctional services and is placed on correctional supervision or released on parole, it must be dealt with by the taking of the sample before the release.
What about those who have been released already?
You said it's whatever the meaning.
What about those who have been released already?
And then, too, there was the other part of the provision that they also included that people who reoffend. Now, the people who reoffend with the acts in operation, their DNA will be taken upon the rest. So that's why we thought that the head of an overview to put something additional in.
Thank you, Chair. Another thing that we had during the discussion was the real involvement of CCF also in this matter. In a sense that when members are released, they will also have to have a role to inform, because if the people are already detained or convicted, this is really within their mandate of corrections, not police. So when that happens, there is the square responsibility to DCS as well to ensure that that process is properly notified accordingly. I'm only afraid to say if we isolate this substance taking over role responsibility and doing the role of the cluster of DCS, which the CJS has also provided for them in terms of the detention management, their capacity does not have to limit their provision for them to also make sure that this comes into place.
Yeah, but Madam Chair, they said this morning about 15,000 who are already outside under correctional supervision. Now the problem with those people, I mean, honestly, I'm not sure SAS is going to be able to go around, get those people, and take the sample. I mean, 15,000 already means going around.
You see, we there's three issues here. The one is the conflictedness. That's simple enough.
Straightforward.
Hopefully, such will use logic and we'll start with the ones that are there and are always up for vote and not start with the new ones. But then you have those that are out on correctional supervision. The 15,000. Might be more.
No, there are more than that.
Yeah, definitely
there are more than that.
Plus, then, the remand detention. They're not sentenced yet. And they're waiting trial, yes.
No. The waiting trial, Jefferson, is there for the doings of the police. They are just using the correctional service as a warehouse. It's the responsibility of the police. Because the ADT, the awaiting trial detainees, are the responsibility of the police. It doesn't matter how long they are, but that's the responsibility of the police, not the correctional service.
Thank you,
Chief.
Yeah, I think that the point raised by Honourable George is really considered. I mean, you're talking about 60,000 people that are not in facilities at their homes. And if you're going to say that tax must go to all those 60,000, it's going to be a massive task. So if we word it, we need to be very careful around it, because otherwise it's going to be very putting an obligation which is unrealistic to be fulfilled on tax in that regard.
Secretary, yes, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you, and I agree with the Honourable George. The fact of the matter is, do you want that 60,000 on your database? That's the bottom line. If you want it, then you've got to come with a solution how it's going to happen. You've got to word it how it's going to happen. And as much as it's difficult for you, it's going to be difficult for correctional services as well in terms of this. So we need to come with a workable solution. Because the honourable members is also correct. These are sometimes our first three offenders. Are those guys. We see it every time we have pardons. How quickly they get back offending. So the fact is that it's got to be reworded. There's no question about it. I think that rather than spending too much time on it now, this whole section needs to be reworded to do the following things, to make sure that such take the ultimate responsibility in terms of, with the cooperation of correctional service, of getting the samples for those who have already been sentenced, as well as those who are keeping who are in remand detention. Secondly, you've got to make provision, because this currently is not really saying how we're going to do it, for the 60,000 that is out on bail. Oh, not on bail, on correctional supervision. So what I'm saying is, I hear what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying, it's fine to say we're putting a burden on such, that's impossible. The fact of the matter is, if you want them on the database, we've got to make a plan, and the plan's got to be in the Act. And you can even talk to it in terms of the transitional arrangements, as far as I'm concerned. But we can't say it's an impossible task, but at the same time we say we want it on the DNA, but it's an impossible task, let's just leave it out of the bill. That's not the answer.
But remember, Madam Chair, there's still another group that of remand detainees, that is the one that is out there waiting to go to court.
Awaiting trial.
The awaiting trial detainees is fine. That's easier. You're talking about the ones that are out on bail who are awaiting trial. They are different group of people.
Yes.
Surely, Chair, they would already have had their DNA taken on the rest.
No.
It's the ones that are there now.
You're right, the ones that are there now. I don't know.
You guys need to look at the transitional arrangements again. You've got to look at the transitional arrangements again. The transitional arrangements got to speak to those people who are out of bail awaiting their trial to take place.
Yeah.
It's got to speak to the people who are on correctional supervision, and then it's got to speak, well, then we've got to have this. This section almost belongs, quite frankly, in the transitional arrangements. Because once you've done that, every new person going into the correctional services facility, arrangement. But what is not here is the people that are on bail, awaiting trial, and the correctional supervision. And somehow you've got to apply your minds on how are we going to do it. Even if we have a transitional arrangement that say those out on bail at their next appearance at court, their DNA will be taken. Even if that's as simple as that.
Yeah.
That you take it at court
when
they appear, and it's part of justice's making provision for a facility where you can do so. So can we skip this thing and we come back to it with a more detailed... Are you in agreement that this actually belongs in transitional arrangements?
That's also one of the questions that was also speaking when the authorized office said that in line with what the chair was saying, that there was actually the responsible people that's now, and the DNA part now will be looking for the taking of samples which now continue the role of the technical help.
Is that a key, isn't it?
Key. Can we have,
yes, just before we break the
key, the safeguard advisors want their money.
Oh, that's their key, okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just to point out, Chair, that this is an amendment bill, Chairperson, and the principal act already has its structure. So I think it would be kind of clumsy to put in a section that says now all of a sudden transitional arrangements. I don't know if it will fit in.
This is the amendment. This is the amendment.
Look, the fact of the matter is that you hear what you're saying. We're not talking about how the structure of it should be. That's your problem in terms of the technical advice that you've got to give us. The fact of the matter is there is transitional arrangements necessary for this board. How you deal with it is up to you. It's your problem. Come back to us with a suggestion. And if it's clumsy, it's clumsy. I don't care, I don't think it's important that it's clumsy. It's transitional arrangement. It's going to have a cut-off date. It's going to, at that point in time, and maybe it's good that it is in a transitional arrangement, clumsy as it might be, that we also can have a time frame to this. By this time, all of this must be done.
Exactly.
So I think it's got to be, I understand what you say. We knew there was going to be problems because we're speaking on the principle, on a bill that was divided and in these two sections, etc., etc. But we can't ignore the fact that there are things that's going to happen in the transitional arrangement. Now they are more than what we thought they would be because of the presentation that we got this morning. We've still got to look at that as well. Because now we want in the transitional period to give Commissioner Shetty and her team more time for some of this stuff. But after the transitional arrangement, after 4 weeks, we want to go back to 30 days. So, you know, it's more than that, just that part. Let's have a tea break. Can we come back at half past? Members are asking for 25 to 4. I think Commissioner Jacobs, I want you to look at the transitional arrangements as a section, a separate section. Even if it's at the end of the bowl, it's fine. And that transitional arrangements must include the arrangements around correctional services, the crimes, because for the transitional period we might want to limit the crimes that we are doing. Because Schedule 1 is broad. And we might want to limit the crimes specifically for the transitional arrangements to rape, murder, serious violent crimes, and sexual offences. I think it would also be good if the transitional arrangements, and let's not worry about whether it's going to be clumsy or not. I think it's more important that it's practical and that it works. That we also have a time there by when the transitional arrangement expires and that section then gets deleted. So if it means that at that point in time, let's say they've given us today the date of June 2017, which knowing hiking SAFs might be June 2020, I don't know. If it then means that they are not ready yet, it would force them to come back to Parliament and say, we don't want this transitional arrangement proceed yet. We
ask
for extension of the transitional arrangement. And if you can word it in that way as well. I think the other thing that I want to relay, and it's unfortunate that they are not here, but when we get to that part of the bill, please, or if it's not in there, we must put it in there. This committee and it's the people that will succeed us after next year's elections must have quarterly reports starting the 31st of July this year. So the first report, August, September, October, 31st of October, on the implementation. So that we up to date about things that are going wrong. If they are making quicker progress, fine. And that must be in there until the final implementation. Quarterly written reports. They don't have to come to the committee, but we need to get a report on a quarterly basis to say, this is where we are, this is how much we spend, and here we are behind, here we are ahead. I think that's the only way. We don't want to go the route of the central firearms, the firearms bill again. We believe everything is in place and then it seems like nothing is in place in the end. So when we get to other issues that's got to go into the transitional arrangements, let's identify them and then move them all to one section dealing with transitional arrangements.
I have no problem with your proposal, but I would be very happy if they also look at the legal implications, especially when they start limiting the Shady One offenses. What are the legal consequences of that? Are there no consequences?
That is fine. They can let us to, if there should be consequences, I don't think there would be, because it's up to the legislature to determine which offences must be covered by this, and nothing stopping us to broaden that after it's been implemented as well. I think it would also give us a clear indication of the success of the bill. If you, in the beginning, have limited offences and then rather progressively increase the number of offences that can be covered by this.
Yeah. With the initial proposal, with just the Schedule 1 offences plus how do they then, without a total review of the legislation, move on to include other scheduled crimes? Can it be worded in such a way that could be left up to the board? How could it be done that one does? I mean, I know there's an initial review, 5 years? But to have to wait 5 years if it's all working well, or am I smoking my socks here, maybe?
I think it's smoking your socks, because in any case, we're going to have 4 years before it's fully implemented. And so 5 years is actually quite perfect in terms of this. And I think the legal requirements I must look at, you know, the question that the Honourable George has asked as well. But it is, I think it's possible, that's why I say, put this under the transitional arrangement, Honourable Kulabana. The limiting of the offences can also be put under the transitional arrangements. And then once you've reached that point, you can then open it up to Schedule 1 offences. And then, as the bill is already making provision, any other offence that the minister announcing the Government Gazette. So it's open for even further than Schedule 1 at some point in time. Not having to review the Act, not having to change the Act, etc., etc. It's much smoother that way, and I know there was previously, in the Hawks legislation, there was something similar. So we can still look at that as well. So can we continue, please?
we're on page 17, samples for investigation purposes. That's the subject to subsection 2 and section 36A5. An authorized person may take a buccal sample of a person or a group of persons, or supervise the taking of a buccal sample from a person who is required to submit such sample and who requests to do so himself or herself if there are reasonable grounds to A, suspect that the person or that one or more of the persons in that group has committed an offence referred to in Schedule 1, and B, believe that the sample or the results of an examination thereof will be of value in the investigation by excluding or including one or more of those persons as possible perpetrators of the offence. Sub 2, if a person does not consent to the taking of a buccal sample, under this section a warrant may be issued by a judge or a magistrate if it appears from written information given by the authorized person on oath or affirmation that there are reasonable grounds for believing that A, any person from whom a buccal sample is to be taken has committed an offence listed in Schedule 1, and B, the sample of or the results of an examination thereof will be of value in the investigation by excluding or including that person as a possible perpetrator of the offence. Then three, the provisions of section 36D5 and 6 apply with the necessary changes to the sample or DNA profile derived therefrom as contemplated in subsection 1.
Remember anything here? I think it's quite straightforward.
Again, you see that says specifically in Schedule 1 offences. There's no caveat that says unless something tied in with what we were proposing and or additional or whatever, come up with the legally stuff, but you know what I'm saying. We were saying it could additional additional crimes may be added on, federal crimes at a later stage. So without again changing all the legislation, that would have to tie in with a Schedule 1 or anything else as determined in the preamble. They must work together.
I think it's covered because of this, that section that we give the minister power to add to this. So that would apply to the whole of the Act, not only to the two specific sections. It applies to the whole of the Act. That the minister from time to time can
add. Is that correct? Mr. Chair, but I would caution as well that this section is specifically related to where it's needed for a specific crime that's been committed. And we have the and there between the A and B. So it's suspect that the person or one of the more of those persons in the group has committed an offence referred to Schedule 1, and then because there's an and, it is limited by that to believe that the sample or the results will be of value in the investigation by excluding or including one or more of those persons. So there is a limitation built into this. It's not as wide as the general obligation.
What I was suggesting was you simply add, after listed in Schedule 1, or any other crimes as determined by the minister. Something that ties in with what we were saying about expanding this list or the possibility of expanding it without us having to fiddle with the legislation.
See, first, whether it's necessary given the fact that we have that provision there and whether that provision is applicable here as well or not, and then check first and then you can come back and confirm for us whether it's necessary or not. Can we continue?
Two issues I wish to raise. One relates to page 15, where in sub 6, where reference is made to a buccal sample taken from a person. And reference there is made to suitability or insufficiency. And it reads, A, an authorized person from, or rather nothing in this chapter prohibits an authorized person from retaking a buccal sample from any person referred to in subsection 1 or 3 if the buccal sample taken from him or her was either not suitable for DNA analysis, or insufficient. Because there is the sufficiency and suitability, or rather the DNA analysis will apply to both the to both sufficiency and suitability. So I suggest that rather we do not say or insufficient, but rather say or was either not suitable or insufficient for DNA analysis, and then end there.
I think that makes sense. Can we do that?
The other issue, Chair, relates to the question of penalties in respect of misuse of DNA samples or profiles. In the last meeting or in the meetings before recess, concerns were raised by the committee that there may be cases where a juristic person is charged in respect of an offence, of that offence of misuse. But the way the provision in 16C, there in the penalty provision, is worded, reference is made there to a natural person and a juristic person. But the Criminal Procedure Act already, in Section 332, already makes provision that a juristic person may not be sent to prison if convicted. So while the reference to a natural person or juristic person does not make any harm here, but with the view to aligning this provision to the fingerprinting provision, because the fingerprinting provision also makes provision for a period of imprisonment of 15 years and without an option of a fine. Perhaps this should be aligned with that, so that reference to a natural person and juristic person is deleted, so that, because in any case, a juristic person, in terms of the legislation as it stands, cannot be sent to a prison in respect of a conviction.
I hear what you're saying, but I think this was put in because the committee felt very strongly that we want to be explicit about it. I don't think it's doing harm to have it here. I hear what you say, that it's already making provision that they can't be sent to jail. That's part of the problem why you have the building of soccer stadiums in this country, and people get a fine and they get away with it because they budget for that fine at the point where they tender for building. And I mean, quite frankly, I think it's problematic that we're not keeping juristic persons, have not the possibility of going to jail. But that's a different argument altogether. The committee clearly said that we want to be explicit about it, because if somebody is going to sell DNA from the side of SAPS, it's going to be because a juristic person have offered them enough money to do so.
And we can pay for it.
The insurance company is offering them enough money to make it worth their while to put their career on the line, and we said we want to be explicit about the fact that we want to keep the company also responsible. And I don't think this is in contravention with what you are raising. For us, it was a question of wanting to be explicit about it.
So I can just mention that this was taken from other legislation as well, where the fine was also in, but as a result of the legislation that makes provision for the fine, alignment of the fine with the prison, that we've aligned it to the wording as it should be in terms of the existing legislation.
So while we agree with you on the first point, I think we disagree with you on this point.
What?
No, we disagree with her on this point. We take the first point that she's raised, we take off. But this one, I think there's a reason behind it. Secretary, you excuse me.
Yes,
you've got to travel back to Pretoria soon. Can we continue?
Madam Chair, this is the work of group. I know I express my respect. Can they just do me one last favor? Check if there are any possibilities of litigation. So you go to this one person at history, runs, and we are sitting and having our wine dumped in. Then the police take all of us as a group. I just want to check, is there any possibility of this case?
Chairperson, I think we discussed this as well when we did the fingerprint legislation. and I think the value of the section is not that you can only implicate a person. The value of it is also to release people. You won't arrest a person if he's willing to give his DNA or fingerprints. You won't arrest a person. In this case, we said that with DNA, you would need a warrant. But if the person is willing to give it, he can voluntarily give it. And I think in most instances, a person will rather voluntarily give this than having to be arrested and going through the process. So I think we shouldn't look at this section only as in a negative light. I think it has a lot of positive effects in respect of people who were not really involved and are willing to cooperate with the police to get to the point of the finalizing the investigation.
But and I also raise that it's not only in the Fingerprints Act, it's also in the Firearms Control Act. There's also a provision there, and the lead person in that was the Honourable George. I just want to remind us about that. There's also a provision in the Firearms Act similar to that, and the Explosives Act, similar to this, where, and I remember we used the example, if you stop a bus and that they were illegal firearms or whatever, you then can, everybody in the bus can repeat the suspect at that point in time. So I don't think we're going to have problems with this. You can check again and come back to us, but
thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add that a magistrate, the court is going to consider on the basis of an affidavit that's given to him whether to grant that permission to give to a person who's refusing. So the court is going to apply its mind as to whether that DNA should be taken or not.
I think, madam, your summary is right. I don't think this is understood. I'm saying here the person. This police come and this is a fine. Take this horse. but then after that, he goes to court and say my dignity and everything. I'm there for taking. I'm saying, is that not possible?
It can't be possible. I think in view of all the factors and how this is structured, I'm not aware of any, the Firearms Act is in operation since 2004. I'm not aware of any litigation on this specific point.
State law opposes?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important that we know that the warrant requirement is built into this provision. First, the first instance there is the consent. The second instance is the warrant requirement to safeguard the privacy and the dignity, all those constitutional concerns, and that is why we're talking about that. When a person does not consent, then a court has to be approved.
Yeah, and I think what the state law advisor is saying with that, Honourable George, is that the court, if that person should go the litigation route, the court will say that you have the opportunity to say, no, I don't want my DNA to be taken. You didn't do that. So you've given your DNA willingly. So I think we covered this, but they can still have a look at it and come back to you just for your rest in peace.
That was all the question didn't do one of the reasons why the conflict is considered as a thing is simple. So that the conference is shown in the it is yes, there's some opportune moment you can have it.
You want to demonstrate on the Honourable George. Honourable George, you want to be a volunteer for your DNA sample, please.
No.
You want us to get a warrant?
Get the warrant.
I remember some of us have actually seen this with the first round, but for those members who haven't, you can do it with me quickly. It's fine. Let's do it now that they can see how it's done.
There's a old man.
No, I'm afraid to do it. I'm
the
I'm an innocent person. What? Not in London, yes.
All chickened out.
No,
Canada.
No, 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 no.
All chickened out. You want to see all bombs both
in London, no.
Yeah,
I'm fine. You can't just sit in London where I don't know anybody.
I just want to remind you, Mr. De Clevey. And it's a 60 rand.
Thank you.
Top and bottom here. Ghana is not a very good place. Ghana is not a very good place.
There's a little stripe you can on the bottom.
These ones then go to that portion which is called waste management, recycling of waste. It's under the different categories.
Continue on page 20, section 37 of the committee is hereby amended.
by A, the substitution for subparagraph 1 of paragraph C, subsection 1 of the following subparagraph. 1, we take and we're taking out the words a blood, and we insert an intimate as a result of the definition of intimate sample that's in the book. Then in B, the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection, any medical officer or any prison, of any prison or if requested by an ill police official, any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse may take such steps, including the taking of an intimate sample, as may be necessary in order to ascertain whether the body of any person referred to paragraph A, 1 or 2, subsection 1 of paragraph A or B, section 36B1, has any marked characteristic or distinguishing feature, shows any condition or appearance. Chair, the rest of the section, the committee asked us to look at all the other places where there's reference to blood, and to also include intimate sample instead of blood. So you will see on the next page, in all those instances, all the only amendments are to change A blood to an intimate sample.
I just ask a question. What has it got to do with DNA?
See you.
In which page?
20C.
Page 22.
Just for the committee to see what the act is like. as it continues. So that line there would be in the amendment. So it wouldn't read like that in the introduced version. So the only amendment there would only be the sub paragraph one.
No.
You see, the concern that I have in terms of this is that this is not, that even the blood that you take in here, it maybe should read blood and not infinite. Even the blood that you are taking here is not for the purposes of DNA. It's for the purposes of establishing whether this person is under the influence of drugs or alcohol. It's got nothing to do with DNA. Section 37.3 also has nothing to do with DNA.
So we had a discussion between myself and General Sezi earlier. There's also an amendment to Section 225 where she pointed out that it's not applicable. I think what led us to a large extent here is that we were dealing with the previous, the part that was taken out of the initial report. And some of these issues appeared in that initial report. I think that falls to the conclusions.
Intimate samples is only for DNA, correct? So then this thing should not be here then. And it must say blood. We don't want to change this, because if we change this, it's not referring to the intimate samples in this definition that we have of intimate samples.
If you look at the title of Section 37, it talks to body prints and bodily appearance. I'm now worried when we define appearance as intimate and how we have defined it in the DNA.
This is about blood, and it's about drugs, and it's about alcohol, and therefore it's not applicable to the DNA legislation. We don't want to change that. Changing that is going to get us into trouble with the Department of Justice in 2 seconds, and the police. So I don't think it should be in here. Okay, agreed. Members, happy?
Yes.
Okay, continue please.
Where are we deleting now?
36.
36 what?
From page 19, amendment of section 37, is that correct?
Yeah.
Everything thereafter. Up to the middle of page 23. Just before the next amendment of section 212. All of that gets deleted.
Oh, okay.
I'll ask the technical team just to look at it again, make sure there's nothing that we actually want there, but I'm pretty sure it's not, but just make sure that we don't. But up to page 23 before we start with the amendment of section 212, and that's where you're taking us to now.
On page 28, section 212 of the Criminal Procedure Act is hereby amended.
Page 28.
Well, it actually starts on page 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
Page 28,
please. Mm-hmm.
Listen. Mm-hmm.
Substitution of subsection 8 for the words please in paragraph 8 of the following words. 8. In criminal proceedings in which the conviction, the suit, custody, packing, marking, delivery, or dispatch of any fingerprint or body print, article of clothing, specimen, body sample. There should be a comma after body sample. Tissue, as defined in Section 1 of the National Health Act, or any object of whatever nature is relevant to the issue. A document purported to be an affidavit made by a person who in that affidavit alleges, etc. Okay, this is just to cut short evidence in court where some of the evidence is not disputed and it can be dealt with in terms of certificate. And it's been specifically asked by forensics to include the collection and the body sample there, because tissue might overlap there, but we had to make sure that all the issues referred to in this act is. And the same goes for on page 29b, everywhere you can insert the body sample along the same line.
We just say that, remember now, body sample in this definition does not include crime scene samples, eh? So we need to put in crime scene sample here as well, don't we?
Body sample and crime scene sample. Huh? What are we saying, Chairperson? Body sample and crime scene sample.
To include your body samples and crime scene samples as well. In terms of the affidavit issue. So, can I ask that you relook this whole section, that we just make sure that we've, because it's not only six, there are other places where it should be jumped in as well in the section. Crime scene and body samples. I know there's one bus at 5 o'clock, but there's still time to 5 o'clock. We'll end the meeting at 10 to 5 for those members who must take the bus. So don't worry, we'll make sure that you. Can you check that first and come back to us? Please. Okay, let's go back to page 28 then.
That is all the same as the passing order you will also be putting in the time since all of those instances. So I'm not going to be able to.
Can I just ask Loomis or with us in terms of this issue now?
Yes.
We need to put in time scene samples for wherever we've got
samples.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Then the amendment of section 225, that's on page 33. That is what we discussed, that I've mentioned to the committee, that I think it's very much the same, that it doesn't really fit with them, because it's just out of place. And that is one of the reasons we checked to the original book that was inserted, and I think that led us to follow that draft. That's something
we would say. So can you indicate us from where do we delete?
Chair, no, I think that we delete the same.
Yeah. Indicates us specifically
from page 33
yeah.
up to the end of that just before chapter 5A. And once again, Chair, we will check everything that we have.
What do you mean? That's chapter 5.
So it's from page 33, amendment of section 225,
yeah.
up to the end of that paragraph, ending just before chapter 5A.
On page 34.
On page 34.
Continue, course, please.
No, I don't know.
understand, Chair.
Just one clarity, Madam Chair. My look at this, the only thing that is not relevant in this session, which is when we talk about business, the only thing that is not only relevant is B, where it talks about Mark. And all the rest, from the talk about fingerprint, body print, of course, bodily samples. Can you explain? Because you say it was technical, because the only paragraph where I see it doesn't talk about bodily samples and all that is that one, B, where there's good or such as you, there's any mark. After that thing of marks. It's the only paragraph.
Am I right, General?
It's again the drugs issue, is it not? I mean, drugs and alcohol issue. It's not applicable to DNA here. It's applicable to the drugs and alcohol test. Yeah. The appearance of the person.
What are we deleting then?
We are deleting from page 33, where it says amendment of section 225. Start deleting then. Continue to delete page 34 just before chapter 5A.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
Can I ask you, members? Can I ask members, we now are going to start with the SAS Act. From chapter 5A, am I correct? That's the SAS Act. We now dealt with the Criminal Procedure Act, the CPA. Just you satisfied with what was done? Is there any comments from your side on this?
Yeah, Chair, I'm satisfied only that the areas that you the committee requested that be re-looked I might have some comments in respect of them, but that is for the case to record.
Then I would suggest, members, that we stop here. We continue tomorrow from 5A, when we start with the satellite. So we know now we've dealt with the Criminal Procedure Act. Then we can start tomorrow on a clean slate with the SAS Act part of it. I'm not going to, tomorrow, Commissioner Jacobs, I'm not going back to the Criminal Procedure Act tomorrow. Even if we finish a bit earlier, it doesn't matter. I want to give the team enough time to go back and look at those things. So we will start next week, Tuesday, again from afresh. Honourable Kulabona?
Yeah. Chair, each time you've referred to putting in crime scene samples, there's lots of shaking of heads and tearing and weeping and wailing on the other side here. There's a lot of disagreement with that. So maybe we should discuss that further with the legal members. Because I have a seat, I can see they're all very, he's tearing his hair out and they're all shaking and they don't, whether there is a thought that any, that there's no division between the two or that the one covers the second, I don't know, but there's a problem. They're all too shy to speak about.
No, well, I'm sorry, you're getting paid to advise you. You keep quiet, I can't read minds. I'm sorry. I really can't read minds. You either speak out, and you raise the issues, or forever hold your peace. I will say to you exactly what I said to you, SAPS, after their presentation on the Child Justice Act, and they asked them, do you have any problems, and they said no, and afterwards they wanted to say, we have problems. According to this minutes, you don't have a problem. So speak out, please. We can't read your mind. What is the problem?
Thank you, Chair. I think she indicated that we have to relook at the issue, and we have concerns that we have to really look at in respect of the crime scene samples being included there as well. But this will be part of the exercise to come back to the committee on that particular issue. Because initially the instruction was to substitute blood sample with an income sample, but as the committee now pointed out, in some cases it's not appropriate, and we agree with that, so we will relook at that and come back, and also the aid of justice on that particular issue as well, so they also have consolation on that particular issue. But we are in agreement, we are, as instructed by the committee, we will relook at it and come back to the committee on that particular issue. Thank you, Chair.
Can I make it clear to the legal team who are here, whether you are from SAPS, whether you are from justice, whether you are from stable advisors, I don't care.
You raise your hair from
time. You raise your issues. We can't read your minds. And secondly, you clean up the section now by Tuesday. We want a clean section. And we want a section that you all agree on, that we don't again have people non-verbally communicating their decisions. Because really, it's frustrating to us as well. There's a reason why there's a legal team this big here to raise issues. And there's a reason why you're all supposed to be on the technical team and work together so that we can have a concise and an agreed view when we come here. And by Tuesday, I expect that this section of it is cleaned up, that you all are in agreement with it, that there's no disagreements. And can I please, Commissioner Jacobs, I'm making a request, that section that you're going to give it to us on Tuesday, give it to us in colour with the changes that needs to be here. Don't ask the committee section to make the copies.
Because
they are deprived of colour copies. So, you see, I told you this morning, there's a secret purse. It's called the CJS. They're sponsoring now a colour copier from the CJS budget.
Hey,
I told you.
Don't joke about that. Don't go there anymore.
They've got a problem spending CJS funding, so they're now willing to give the...
Anything.
So please, can we... Yeah. Tomorrow morning, we're meeting at B227 Avenue. We're starting 9:30. Our car's tyre has been fixed, so I probably won't be late again.
Just worried you didn't use my company.
Sorry?
I'm worried you did not use my company.
You don't offer discount.
No,
so can we then, tomorrow we will continue with from chapter 5A on page 74. Commissioner, there's not that much more. I think this is actually the easier part of the goal. There's issues around the boards and things and so on that we need to look at. But thank you very much, members. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 9:30, same day.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.